Do you struggle with motivating and empowering your team? Do you want not just to lead leaders, but to lead disciple makers? How can having solid leadership and a great team help us make Sunday happen? We'll talk about it today.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. February has been an extremely busy month for me. I've been out at Metro Conference in Nashville, met a lot of great kids, pastors, and leaders at that one. Our team has been doing some long-range planning meetings. I've been in and out of the office. It's just been one of those crazy months. I don't know about you guys. I wanted to let you know about another one coming up, too. That's Philo Conference, coming up May 2nd and 3rd in Chicago. Our team will be there. Can't wait to see you there if you're coming. They have some really great folks already lined up for this event, including Todd Elliott, Megan Marshman, John Jorgensen, and more on the way. They're filling up their lineup now. It's going to be really good. Be sure to get to an event this year like Philo. It's really great to meet people, hang out in person, see you guys in person, get to talk with you and hang out with you. And Philo is a great place to do that. Be sure to sign up for Philo again, May 2nd and 3rd in Chicago. All right, this week on the show, I welcome Michelle Barnett. Michelle oversees the Leadership Accelerator Training Program at the Multiply Group. I had my friend Mac Lake on the show a few weeks ago. Mac runs the Multiply Group. I know Mac from years of working in church planning organizations and helping churches with church plants and leadership development. He's built a great team at the Multiply Group, and Michelle is certainly one of those. Michelle works with Mac as they help leaders be better leaders. So today we're going to be talking about how to motivate your team, how to lead disciple makers, how to value the personalities on your team, how to maximize the strengths of the people on your team, and more. Jam-packed episode on leadership today. Well, we'll jump right in with Michelle after a quick word on Philo. Check this out.
Production work is hard no matter where it is. And I think church actually makes it even harder. Our calling is it's to serve and to sacrifice a little bit.
Because of God's spirit within me, I have the endurance and perseverance to say yes one more day.
I believe from the bottom of our heart, God called us to stay in a marathon, being passionate about church and the kingdom.
If you're letting leadership set your value, I might ask you to go home and pray about that. You are an heir to the kingdom of God. That's your value. Preserve the value that God placed on you when he died on the cross for you.
The church should be the most hope-filled place in the world. It should be the most hope-filled community in the world. And when we live in light of that, we can bring it every day.
Your work isn't primarily technical. It's holy and sacred because what you put your hands, your head, and your heart to for hours mirrors the very methodical miracle of God's creation.
Our job as leaders is to set people up to win so that they can flourish and live the life they are called to.
Hey guys, today I welcome Michelle Barnett. Michelle is the director, was the director of the church planning assessment for the North American Mission Board. She was one of the first and the youngest female senior directors ever for NAM. And today she helps oversee the leadership accelerator training at the Multiply Group. Michelle, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the Multiply group. We both know our friend Mac Lake there, but tell me about the Multiply group and what you guys do there.
So we are fairly new. We've been around for about 3 years as officially as the Multiply group. And one of the things that really sparked Mac to start the company and encouraged me to want to work there was that, you know how churches, they really struggle with having enough leaders. They struggle. Many times the staff themselves struggle with leading well because they've just never been developed. They've never had really good leadership development themselves. And so what we do at Multiply Group is we offer specific trainings and resources and things to teach leaders how to lead better, how to lead well, and also how to build a leadership development strategy for their entire church where they can raise up more highly qualified and better leaders. So everyone on our team has actually been on staff at a church previously, or we're high-level volunteers, committed volunteers on staff. Mm-hmm. So we don't just like understand that pain. We have actually felt the pain, you know, of not being able to recruit leaders, not having enough people wanting to step up and volunteer. So all of us are just really deeply committed to wanting to see really discipling leaders through leadership development as a normative behavior for all churches and their volunteer teams.
Have you seen that as a much bigger need, you know, with COVID and staffing changes and a lot of people, you know, there's stats of people leaving the ministry and then and all that. Have you guys seen a shift in that last couple of years?
Definitely. Where it was already an issue before, it was already a struggle to try to reach in, and it felt like there was a lot of turnover with volunteers. Well, when COVID hit and a lot of the really committed volunteers, a lot of churches would have said, hey, these were our most committed people. They just stopped coming when the doors opened back up. And so they've been trying to recover from that and really start to look out and see, okay, who can we start to raise up and develop again to, you know, step into those leadership roles and those volunteer roles. And so I feel like the need has grown more for needing to find those good leadership development structures and systems and things to put in place to help raise them up. But yeah, definitely have seen a greater need for that post-pandemic.
So when I'm at conferences and stuff, one of the questions I get is that, how do I get my, not as much, I guess, recently, but how do I get my volunteers to come back? Was a big question that I got a lot. I want to see if you agree with this. Eventually, I got to a point where I'm like, oh, they're probably gone. Like, you probably need to kind of start with a fresh group and go after and invite new people and raise that up. Do you agree with that? Or should I worry about, like, I got to get my old person back?
Yeah, I personally would agree. I think if you work to try to get that person back relationally, try to connect and bring them back, and you're just not seeing that happen or the fruit of that, I would really recommend focusing on who you have, who is there in the mm-hmm. seats, and who are coming, because they may just be waiting for an opportunity to be invested in, to be developed, and to be seen as a potential leader. So yeah, at some point, you know, there's a little bit of that. I know a lot of what we've experienced in ministry is it's not just volunteers. These were our friends. These are people we had deep, you know, connections with. And so it's hard to see them go. But if it's to that point where, you know, we've tried, we've reached out, it doesn't look like they're coming back, let's really focus more on who we've got here and how we're going to develop them and raise them up.
So to that end, I want to kind of get into the Leadership Accelerator team training program that you guys have. And speak to this before we kind of dive in. Is this just for staff, or these principles will definitely work in a volunteer structure as well, right?
Yeah, we focus primarily on the church staff. So that's where we want to start it. But we are giving them tools and resources to be able to take it to their volunteers. So the hope is to be able to start there and give them the resources they need to then begin to develop and train their volunteers. But when we go in and take a staff accelerator or a leadership accelerator to a church staff, we are typically working primarily with the staff initially.
So what is the goal at the end of the program? What do you want the staff to realize?
We really just want them to be able to have a better, healthier system of leadership that's going to really marry the relationships and results piece. So a lot of times with teams in general, maybe more so on church staff, you'll have like high relationships on teams and people who get along great, but you may not see a lot of results, a lot of things get happening, moving forward, a lot of productivity there. Or it could be opposite. If it's a highly productive team and maybe they're focusing less on relationships, it might be a little bit more of a cold, unfriendly environment on that team. And so what we really want to see is marrying those two things, really focusing on relationships and results and helping them become more productive, healthier, stronger teams who are then developing other healthier, stronger leaders as a result.
So you mentioned results. And one thing I love about the training is how you deal with leaders that struggle with motivating and empowering their team. So give me some examples in the program of how you guys do that. How do you help leaders with motivation and empowering their teams?
Yeah. So a lot of that is really explaining the why. Why is this valuable? Why is this important? Why does it matter that you're doing what you do or investing in other leaders or potential future leaders and helping them understand the why? And what we would say is it's a form of discipleship. We really believe, I know leadership development kind of was real big, you know, early 2000s, everything was about leadership and leadership development. And then it kind of felt like, well, maybe this is too businessy. Maybe it's too much in the business world and we focus too much on that. But what we at Multiply Group, we see it as really a form of discipleship, that if you're leading and developing leaders in the right way, then you're discipling them. And so we want to try to provide really, really practical tools that are going to help them do that. Because I know some people, some leaders, including myself, I was in this category. I had the best of intentions. I loved leading teams. I loved working with teams. But I had zero intentionality behind it. I had very low discipline when it came to follow up, to creating some things and putting some things in that helps my leaders or my team achieve bigger results. So that was a little bit of the issue I struggle with. So that's what we address. We want to provide really, really practical tools to help people find that motivation, become energized around it, and then also just be able to take that next step and actually follow through with it.
So how can those who serve in leadership kind of move from not just being leaders, but a leader of leaders, a disciple maker? What are some tools from the program that you guys talk to leaders about with that regard?
Well, one of the first things we dive into is we really want to, and it's my personal conviction of really wanting to help redefine discipleship a little bit. I think we've gotten to a place where discipleship is maybe having a good accountability partner, or maybe meeting once a week to do Bible study or devotionals, things like that. And what we really want to do is help redefine that and to say that leadership development, as I mentioned, is a form of discipleship. And it's not just about those once a week meetups or just making sure that you're checking in. You know, how are you doing? How is your moral standing? Things like that. Yeah. It's actually watch me, come and see what I'm doing. It's not telling people about Jesus. It's actually showing them what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. And people on church staffs, like if you are a pastor or a leader on a church staff and you have a team, those are really should be your primary discipleship relationships outside of your immediate family. If you know your spouse and your kids, if you're married and have kids, then these are your primary discipleship relationships, because they're the ones who you are leading, you're providing direct guidance to, and should be utilizing that opportunity to develop them, pour into them, and let them see you leading, let them see you being a lead discipler and a disciple maker. So it's really a lot of it's just redefining what that looks like and helping them understand you're not just a paid staff member, you're actually discipling those who are on your team, whether they're staff or volunteers. If you've got a team of volunteers, you are discipling those people. And it doesn't even just apply, like I've said, to senior pastor. If you're the facilities director on site, you're the production lead and you have volunteers, you are discipling, you know, that young kid who wants to learn how to run the soundboard. You're discipling them and should take that responsibility of being a lead discipler for that person.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's kind of been a soapbox of mine too, that, oh, I'm not a pastor. Well, yes, you are. you are a leader of your team, and you need to pastor your group. If you're the production guy, or if you're the worship leader, or whoever you are, pastor doesn't have to be in your title for you to pastor and care for those under you.
Absolutely. I'd say it's even a responsibility of every believer is to carry out the Great Commission, right? And so if you're on staff at a church, that elevates that responsibility and says, now you're not just a disciple maker, you are a model disciple maker for those around you. And had a great example of that of a facilities director from a church that we worked with, who they were not pleasant. They were not a pleasant person to be around. And they were that challenging person on the team. And they oversaw the facilities. So people kind of looked the other way. They were like, well, they get the chair set up, they keep the place clean, they do what they need to do. But the challenge there was that they were the primary contact for other organizations outside of the church. So if the community wanted to come and use the facilities for anything, they were the person that they talked with and sometimes could rub the wrong way. Right. And the problem wasn't necessarily that this person wasn't the right person. That may or may not be the case, but they weren't being discipled and they weren't being developed. And no one was telling them, hey, we've got to hold you to a higher standard. You're representing not just our church, but for some of these folks who are non-believers, you're representing the Lord to them. And so we need to hold you to a higher standard, and you are discipling just by the nature of being paid by our church on staff. Right. And that's your automatic role. So I just wish more churches understood and knew that held that responsibility.
So what was the result of that? How did this person take that?
So they worked with them one-on-one, and ultimately they didn't realize that. They knew, you know, that they might have a tendency to lose it occasionally, but they had no idea that they were really, truly rubbing people the wrong way consistently. And they felt very convicted by that and began to work on it and began to be discipled. And actually, they'd have their slip ups, you know, but the last time I checked in with them, it was almost like night and day, a different person, just because they had taken the time to focus on that, to develop them and make sure that they were really understanding what it means to walk out the fruits of the Spirit in their life.
So there are stats recently of people leaving the ministry and that. And so I want to talk to you about kind of soul care, or how do we, I guess I should ask it this way. Do you think that there is obviously there's a spiritual component of being on a church staff that's not the same as if I'm working anywhere else, the spiritual warfare is very real. Mm-hmm. So how do I deal with that as a leader, and how do I make sure that the souls of my team members are taken care of?
Well, I think that, you know, recognizing that, first of all, that you're exactly right, that it is the spiritual warfare is greater, and it's the attacks can come a lot harder than if you are working outside of the church or somewhere in a regular organization. So recognizing that and really making it a focus of, you know, your daily rhythms of leadership, and it's part of that discipleship with your team. So we encourage things like on your regular one-on-ones with your team, that you're checking in with them to see how they're doing, to check in, hey, how have things been going? Where have you felt some challenges going on in your spiritual life? And incorporating in team meetings some you know, devotional time, word from the word, things like that, of saying, hey, we'd love for somebody to have the opportunity to share what's on their heart right now, what the Lord's doing in them. I had a team who they did what they called God sightings, and they regularly talked about where did they see God through the week? What were some opportunities and things where they saw God present, where they saw him work, where they saw him move? And it just keeps your mindset in that direction of focusing on and remembering that we're not here just to get jobs done. We're not here just to minister to the people who are coming, which is incredibly important. We've got to care for our own souls first and have our leaders taking responsibility for that and saying, hey, it matters to us. A team who's praying together, who's growing in spirit together, they're going to be a stronger, more cohesive team, and they're going to be able to do more. So practically, we encourage things like just regular times together in prayer with your team, checking in one-on-one and as a group, just to see how you doing, how you keeping up with, you know, spiritual development, things like that in your life.
Good. What about personalities? How important is knowing someone's personality and leading them based on their personality?
Oh, it's so critical. And I know this can be a hot button topic of, you know, the personality assessments. Are they good? Are they bad? Right. Do they put you in a box? And so wherever, you know, you stand on that process on different personality assessments, knowing and understanding what makes each of your team members tick, how they're wired, what their behavioral tendencies are, is so critical to helping them grow. First of all, grow to be the healthiest versions of themselves. And two, just for better team interpersonal dynamic management. So we talk a lot about conflict management, which is great. But if you understand kind of how to approach somebody based on their personality types, and you understand that certain things trigger certain people quicker than others and things like that, and you're adjusting your approach on certain things, you're going to be in the business of conflict prevention at that point. So when you're honoring people for how they're wired, because what tends to happen is you may have, anyone who studies psychology probably studied this, a fundamental attribution error is that when somebody else, when I behave badly, it's circumstantial. It's like, oh, well, I didn't mean to do that or whatever. But if someone else behaves badly, well, what a jerk, you know, why would they do that? Or you get frustrated. A great example of this is driving, you know, when you're driving and somebody cuts you off, you're like, oh my gosh, I bet that guy's the biggest jerk to his family. So self-entitled, all these things. Well, if I cut somebody off, I'm like, oh, sorry. Right. I didn't see you. My bad. I didn't mean to do that. Right. And so when you know, first of all, how each person on your team operates, when you know their personalities and understand that, then you can help to understand that, you know, not everybody's going to respond the way I do. And I'm not going to be guilty of fundamental attribution error and assign bad motives to them because they may have behaved in a way that I didn't expect or I wouldn't think was right. You're understanding that and you're helping the team also work better together. So people with very differing personalities, when they understand each other, they can start to sympathize a little bit and work a little bit better together through that.
Do you have a preference on how to evaluate that? You know, is it DISC? Is it Enneagram? Do you guys have a preference?
Yeah, so we primarily use DISC when we do Leadership Accelerator, simply because it's one of the easiest to understand. Myers-Briggs is great. I actually was a psychology major in college, so I love all those assessments. It's great, but it's just hard to remember what everybody's type is. And then Enneagram is a personal favorite of mine as well. But again, it's 9 types. It takes a lot of, it's more, I feel like Enneagram is better for self-development and spiritual growth and things for looking inward. DISC is nice because it's easy and it's lends towards its behavioral. It's out, you can see kind of, and people can usually quickly identify when you describe what each DISC type is. They can usually say, oh, you know, such and such is an I, definitely. And so it's just really easy to get a hold of. So we use DISC. It's not my favorite for really in-depth personality, you know, findings and things like that, but it's a really great place to start. And they've got a lot of free inventories online, free DISC inventories. You can go and figure out what your DISC type is.
Yeah, good. How do I maximize the strengths of my team? How do I find their sweet spot and really lean into it?
So we actually, speaking of assessments, we've started using the Working Genius assessment with Patrick Lencioni's group has put out. It's phenomenal. It is so good for helping people identify what their strongest areas of work are. And so I've recently been certified in that and loving learning about it. So I started using that and it helps identify those areas of strength. And then what we do is we encourage the teams and individuals to start looking at their roles and their day-to-day tasks and say, okay, what of your daily tasks, what are the things like the last things you've done in the last 2 weeks, write down everything you've done. And now we want you to categorize it to say, was this in your strength area, which is a green zone? Was it neutral? It's not really a strength, but not a pain. And it's fine to get through. Or is it in your red zone, which is, I hate doing this. It's the worst thing. It's an energy drainer. I don't like doing this thing. And we have them list those things out. And what that does is it reveals to them the percentage of time that they're spending operating in their strengths, or, you know, the time that maybe they're not. And so maybe they're misplaced, they're misaligned in their roles. Maybe they're spending too much time on things that they can have others do and fill the gap for them. So those are a couple little practical exercises we use to help identify strengths. But then we want to make sure that they're actually operating in their strengths. Because if you're doing things that come naturally to you, that you love to do, your productivity is going to skyrocket. Your, you know, morale is going to go way up because you're going to love what you're doing. And so really just helping align that job description to what's actually in your strengths is really maximizing the strengths of your team.
How much as a leader should I be willing to adjust my team based on those results? Well, I see that Michelle is better at this. So let's maybe, adjust to get her to work in her sweet spot a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. I'd say be fully committed to that as much as you can. And now we always caveat. It's like we're all going to have to do things in our red zone, things we don't like to do. Sure. Very few people like to do an expense report, but sometimes we just got to do it. We got to sit down and make it happen. But if you're leading me and you've seen, I've done this rearview mirror exercise and you see that, you know, 60% of my time is spent in the neutral and red zone and only 40% in my strengths, you may want to try to find some ways to maybe delegate some things, pull some things up from my red zone off. And my red zone may be somebody else's green zone. And is likely a case, I actually had that happen with a team of mine where several team members did a very similar job. And three of them had a whole lot of things in their green zone. And one of them, the fourth one, had several of those same things in her red zone. But their red zone, she had some things in her green. So technically, they were all individually responsible for these things. But we said, you know what, let's shift this around. You love doing these things. They don't like doing them. Let's have you be responsible for those. They're going to take these things that are in your red zone off your plate because they love doing those things and are good at them. And so we shifted that. And so her job looked a little different from their job, but it worked out really well because they were all operating in their strengths. So I would say be highly committed to trying to get people working more in their strength zones than not.
Good. Let's talk about collaboration. What are some good tips on meetings and not meeting me to death?
Oh, meetings. I used to hate meetings. They were the worst. Speaking of Enneagram and DISC and all that, I'm a 7. I'm a high I. So meetings to me equaled absolute boredom. And so your typical, see if this sounds familiar to you, when you would go to a team meeting, a church staff meeting weekly, it's, hey guys, all right, here's a few things. I want to make sure you understand that's coming up. All right, now we're going to go around, do a round robin, and everyone share, you know, take 3 minutes, no more than 3 minutes, share what's going on in your ministry area. No one ever did under 3 minutes. And, you know, the youth team's over there texting each other, and, you know, the creative arts team is completely checked out if they even showed up at all because they knew what was coming. And so just boring. And so what we say is your meeting time is actually the critical time for great collaboration on your individual departmental teams or even your team at large, is being able to utilize those to draw out the collaborative genius of your team instead of just information dumping and communication. Rather than having to go around and do a round robin update, maybe send that in an email. And instead spend that 30 or 45 minutes saying, okay, guys, the children's team let us know they're really struggling with their check-in process. They thought they had a good system. It just doesn't seem to be working. We'd love to get your ideas. What do you think? How can we adjust this? What are some ways that we can make this easier, more streamlined? And everybody in the room is now contributing to the one issue and solving a major problem that, you know, holds up guests and you know, is a frustration for parents and things like that. So you're working together. So utilizing meetings more for collaboration rather than just straight communication, which communication is good. It should be an element of your meeting, but not primarily what your meeting is used for. And we actually have 10 C's of a meeting. So, you know, it's a little tool we use where it has, where you can mix and match. So you might do coaching. You might have casting vision time during your meetings and things like that. But changing those up, using your meetings to actually collaborate rather than just information dumping.
Is there a time limit? Like, our meeting should not go over an hour, or we need to stop and do another one. Is there anything like that?
It probably depends on how often you meet. So if you're meeting once a week, I try to keep it at an hour. There may be, if it's a meeting that you've said, okay, guys, we've got a big thing coming up and I want us to all get in the room and just really, really plan this out, see what we can come up with. You may do a special 90-minute or 2-hour meeting, but if it's just a weekly kind of strategy check-in type meeting, probably an hour. If you have to meet less than that for whatever reason, if it's every other week or once a month, like with my previous team at NAM, we were all virtual. And so we were only meeting once a month. So those were 90-minute meetings because we had to cover a lot more. So it really just depends on what your objectives are and what you're trying to accomplish.
What if my team is super disengaged? that I wish they just had more motivation. I wish they had more energy. You know, how do I maybe keep team members more involved and more committed to the mission?
Yeah, so this is a lot where we have our 8 components that we teach in Leadership Accelerator. This is where seven of them come together, because deepening the engagement of your team is the 8. So if you're focusing on those other 7 of valuing the personalities of your team, clarifying your vision, maximizing strengths, providing soul care, things like that, then you are going to be naturally deepening the engagement of your team. However, it's also going to happen where you're going to get team members, maybe individually, there may even be a whole team who you start to sense are becoming disengaged. And no matter how well you lead, this will inevitably happen for various reasons outside of your control. So one of the things we teach here is making sure you understand and know and are looking for the signs of a disengaged team member. So this is one who you feel like has started to check out. Maybe they're not getting things done as quickly as they used to. Maybe they're quieter than they're used to. They're not contributing in meetings. Looking out for those signs. And then we give some really practical steps on how to diagnose it, some questions to ask, some things to look for. Don't just assume, which we likely tend to do. We usually assume they just don't want to do this anymore. They're just not following through, or they're not getting things done. And instead of assuming that, say, okay, what's the issue here? What's underlying this? What's causing this? It could be something going on at home. They could be having issues at home. It could be that they're just bored and they just need some challenge. They need you to challenge them with some new goals, some stretch assignments, things like that. A lot of different reasons. So figuring out what that is and being able to address that directly will continue to strengthen and deepen the engagement of your team at large if you're looking out for that. So it's using 7 components to build that engagement and to really create that. And then deepen the engagement by keeping an eye out to make sure that people aren't individually becoming disengaged.
So on this podcast, we're all about making Sunday happen. We're all about the helping churches with their worship experience on Sunday, whether that's from a worship or production or senior leader, that sort of thing. So maybe let's bring it into that. How does some of these principles that we've talked about, how can they really help us have a strong team on Sunday?
Yeah. So this is where I think the rubber meets the road. It's seeing it play out on that Sunday morning or Saturday night, or whenever you have that corporate worship, is when you are focused on building and developing a really healthy staff team. You're also developing and training them on how to build their volunteer base and make sure that they're operating in a really strong way. And how that becomes evident to you is it could be a quick diagnosis. It's on a Sunday morning. If a person in the guest ministries area, a volunteer in the guest ministries area, has an issue, or someone on production has an issue, who do they go to fix that? And if it's you as a staff leader, you can automatically say, I'm not actually taking what I'm learning through, me being developed as a team leader to develop my volunteers that way, because what they should be doing is going to someone, a leader that you've trained, a volunteer leader you've trained in that area, who's responsible during that time. And they know to go to them, and that they can basically operate on a Sunday morning. Entire teams can operate without the staff person present. So a great way we encourage this little exercise is called strategic absence. So you can kind of test that by saying, hey guys, I'm out today. I'm not here. I pretend I'm on vacation. I'm not, on Sunday morning, I'm out. And so you kind of put tape over your mouth, you keep your hands by your side, and you just walk around and observe. And it's strategic absence. You are there, but you're practicing not being there. So you can actually see how things work out and play out on a Sunday without you there, and know who needs work, who needs focus. And if people are coming to you asking questions, you're like, nope, I'm not here. I'm not answering questions. You're redirecting them to the correct people. Yeah. And so you're seeing how these things come together and the areas that you need to focus on. So practicing strategic absence, making sure that you've built a really great system for leaders, coaches, things like that from your volunteers on Sunday mornings are really where you're going to see this come together.
Yeah. I love that leader of leaders approach. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to hit you with some quick rapid fire before I leave.
All right.
Are you ready?
Okay. Ready.
Five quick questions. Number one, what is the most common thing that leaders struggle with?
Oh, common thing, probably just developing other leaders. So developing and recruiting other leaders, that's the most common issue I typically hear.
All right. What are the top one or two reasons why leaders leave the ministry?
Oh, burnout. And they don't feel the value of the work that they're doing. Doesn't seem to outweigh the pain that they've been experiencing of that work. So lack of development themselves and just lack of feeling valued.
Good. All right. Number three, what is a common characteristic that you've seen of teams that thrive?
Oh, they are pushing out leadership. It doesn't all come back to the one person. They're sharing leadership and training and developing others to lead and not just making it about themselves.
Good. What is the most attractive character trait of a good leader?
Humility, I would say.
All right, last one. What is a trait of a leader with longevity? What does it take to make a leader last?
Gosh, that's a good one. That's deep. A trait of a leader that has longevity. I think it goes back to humility, leading through humility and knowing that it's not always about them. And really just having that spirit of perseverance that even when it's hard, that they're going to continue and dig in and keep their eyes on Jesus and know that's why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I think it is in ministry, especially, it is a roller coaster. I think there are seasons, definitely, where, you know, it might be a down, but it's going to come up.
Absolutely.
All right. So we've just kind of scratched the surface of the things that you guys cover in your leadership program. So tell us how leaders can learn more and go through the training.
They can just go to multiplygroup.org, and that's a great place to start. So it has all of our you'll find Leadership Accelerator there, but you also find Leadership Pipeline, which is a great system for your whole church to be able to use and develop leaders. So you can go and read more about it there, but there's also a little button on there that's book a call or book an explore call. And that's where you can meet and talk with one of our team that we can help you with your church figure out where you're at and what your needs are and what we have that may be able to support that and help that.
Yeah, good. You guys are doing fantastic work. I know some of the churches that you work with, and just to see the results of that is just awesome. So great work for the kingdom, and really appreciate the time today and all this insight. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thanks, Carl.
Hey guys, Matt McMorris here, pastor of Grace Valley Church. And I just want to tell you, one of the reasons I love 1230 Media is because when we started our church, I wanted to have good video content and sermons and bumpers and that kind of stuff, but just couldn't afford to pay somebody, to hire somebody to do that kind of stuff for us. And so the affordability and the fact that they're constantly coming out with new stuff, they're really helping equip our church. We used their stuff today in a service. We just got done with church, and love being able to have that resource and being able to plan sermons and things that have quality digital to help our services be as sharp and professional as they can be. I highly recommend 1230 Media.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Well, that is it for us this week. Next week on the show, I'll welcome David Leuschner. David is the founder and director of Digital Great Commission Ministries. It's been quite a while since I've had David on the podcast, and we're going to talk about a very important topic to keep your church legal and safe, and that is copyrights and streaming licensing essentials. We're going to teach you how to be legal when it comes to music and video that you play at your church. It's going to be good. That's next week on the show. Go out there and create some incredible worship experiences at your church this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit makingsundayhappen.com.